How would you describe your work in a simple paragraph?
I often draw from visual art. My own background as an undergraduate was in visual art. Started off in painting, and then I branched into performance art, installation, video, some crude video work. And so that continues to be a source of inspiration for me on a regular basis. I'm working on a couple of things that draw heavily from photography and photography theory. So I would say that's probably one of the foremost things. And then also I'm really inspired by folks like Duchamp and performance artists like Marina Abramović or artists like Sophie Cao, who bring in these idea of found objects into mm-hmm. their work or sense of play and mystery.
The most obvious thing I'm thinking of in your book, Spit, are the blanks mm-hmm. and the brackets.
Yes.
Would you just talk about those kind of formal practices in that book?
Sure. With the poems, the blank missive poems, I call them. They're epistolary poems. Some of them I consider actually persona poems, and some are more closely drawn from my own experience and voice. So with the blanks, I guess what I was interested in is this idea of letter form, you know, a poem in a letter form being so intimate, such an intimate addressal, and yet playing with that idea of the ready-made, you know, attributed to Duchamp and those guys, that I just feel like I was interested in combining those two aspects that seem very contradictory in a way. So I was interested in that idea of bringing in the reader, pushing them to participate with affecting the tone and implications of the poem depending on how they filled in the blanks for each one.
Mm-hmm.
So I like that idea of the poem. It can change each time for even the same reader, which I think a poem can do in general, but it was playing with that more explicitly. And with the blanks, I think that's something I'm still processing in a lot of ways. But with the blanks, I wanted to think about what histories that are silenced or in many ways, at least to me, felt very impossible to recover or to relay. And in particular, I'm thinking of my own parents' backgrounds. They were children in the Korean War. So reading about other you know, through literature and history and journalism, other people's experiences, surviving traumatic ordeals. I'm thinking about my role as what is arguably termed as, you know, second-generation testimony. Like, is that possible to convey? And if so, how does one do that? So I think the brackets try to speak to that desire and yet potential impossibility of doing that.
Tell me what poems you've selected to share with us today.
This poem is titled The Real World Is Like This, and that's an allusion to James Galvin. I was interested in this idea of defamiliarizing what I thought was very familiar to me, and that's this idea of family. So, The Real World Is Like This. My sister's bed's a bird's nest, all edges construction paper. She keeps adding what she coaxes father to give up before the police arrive. Food stamps, silver parts of a handgun. If she doesn't stop, her nest bed will soon be too wide to fit through any door frame, let alone down the hallway. Our mother turned hummingbird, predictable as it is, her blurred form and curled feet hidden in the closet. Along the way, my sister and I misplace our mother's bird throat and mistake her silence for fatigue. To make noise, I wear tap shoes to school, click, click over ice and tile, and with each click, my sister grows away from me. I stare down at my silver shoes toward what my mouth can't afford. My sister, on the other hand, looks up at the stretched net overhead. She figures an escape. Through that empty patch, she tells me, pointing at the tiniest square of sky.
I read that in Spit, and it just makes me wonder.
Is there something in particular that you wonder about? Or
To be honest, that patch of empty sky looking for escape catches me somehow.
Well, that's great. I'm glad. It's an image I'm hoping will have this kind of double-edged feeling where it's like, oh, on one hand, it's, you know, the sky. It's something serene that we associate with something serene, pleasant, and yet because it's this square and in the context of the poem, there's something dark and foreboding about it as well.
Mm-hmm. I mean, is that how you see your mom as hummingbird, or is that just a poetic turn?
In this case, I think the poem it is drawn very closely to my own experience. So the speaker is probably safe to say is me. In that poem, the mother is viewed as this beautiful yet fragile and vulnerable creature. So, you know, I was hoping that the poem will allude to the complexity of this mother and yet the ultimate, inevitably, the fragility of this person when you can't see her feet. And if you can't see someone's feet, literally and figuratively, they're not able to walk as a person. They're not able to walk away. And so that was kind of what where I was going with that. When you're in a position such as domestic violence, like where you're not able to, or at least you convince yourself you're not able to walk away, and the implications of that when your child may perceive you that way as well. So there's a larger legacy of, I think, violence that kind of perpetuates a lot of the poems.
Mm-hmm. Another?
Sure. This poem is titled The Good Girl Montage, and one thing I've noticed after putting this collection of poems together is that I often am drawn to, I guess, unsung heroes or people or communities that are often considered the underdog. So in this case, I was thinking about the good girl and how she doesn't get much stage time. So I was playing with that, and it was drawn from a video performance piece I had seen by an artist in which the artist at one point starts weeping, and it becomes this uncomfortable moment as, you know, as a viewer, you're not really sure, like, wait, is this a documentary video, or is this she acting? Is this performance, or is it blurring the lines? So I was really intrigued by that. So the title of this is The Good Girl Montage. The good girl fights a medium-sized meteor, makes a mess, and dies in battle. The good girl picks it back up and refries it. She duct tapes the swivel of a politician, calls the act mercy. She crowns herself queen of glow-in-the-dark, pope of whoop-de-doo, and prisoner of overkill. Mornings, she videotapes herself weeping. The good girl confuses wasps for trees, confuses standing bodies for bees. During her nightly routine, she counts new dents in her mouth brace. She believes in her least favorite person and their dog and its biscuit. To prevent winter, she unscrews the bottoms of snow globes. Instead of spitting on sidewalks, the good girl mends a mouthful of darns. The good girl talks a lot of talk. She swears the bleeding is natural. The good girl watches the snow redden and washes out her knickers. Her safety pin body she pulls and pulls like reins.
The line that caught me was, stopping winter by pouring out the snow globe.
Unscrewing the bottoms of snow globes.
Yes. what an odd thought.
I just thought that the absurdity of that, and trying to be playful with this character. I really was trying to imagine a particular character, but who kind of stands for kind of an archetype. So
hence somehow as well the word knickers just seems quite ridiculous.
You don't use the word knickers? I know, I don't think I've literally ever heard anybody use that word in conversation. But yeah. That's the one thing I love when you're writing. Sometimes it's, you know, you come up with the weirdest language or wordplay or imagery, and sometimes it's so bizarre when you can go back and you literally don't remember writing certain things. And I take that as a good sign. I take that to mean that you actually are in or close to reaching your that zone that Robert Owen Butler tries to teach people to access, you know, the unconscious. So.
Well, Esther, thank you so much for speaking with me today. I've enjoyed learning more about your writing practice.
Well, thank you so much, Kate, for taking the time.